Hi, I'm Steve G. Jones, clinical hypnotherapist, and I'm interviewing John Harry Turan, who is going to talk about the metaphysics of money. And when you think about it, money is actually energy in motion. So it's interesting why some people find it so challenging to get the amount of money they want or need, while other people seem to acquire it as if they're money magnets. So the answer as to why this is happening might astound you. So here to enlighten us about that is my good friend John Harry Turan. John, how are you doing?
Great, great, great to be here again, Steve.
Great to have you. And this is a topic near and dear to a lot of people's hearts because when you think about it, people who don't have money, they want to figure out how to get it. And people who do have money want to figure out how to get more money and how to hold on to what they have. So it seems that everyone, though they may deny it, everyone has some sort of an interest in money.
This is really, really so. It's like you never can get enough, and you have to be at a state of consciousness to say that you really need just the amount you need. Now, what does that mean? It sounds like nothing, but it's really the old story of the Israelites as they wandered across the desert and they were the wilderness, and they were wondering, how are we going to eat? What are we going to eat? And how are we going to get enough? And they were told. They said, in the morning, when you get up, there's something called manna you will find on the ground. It's really great. Take enough, just what you need for that day, and it will carry you through. And the next morning, the same, and the next morning, the same. Here's the funny thing. I always read the metaphysics into holy books, whatever books they are. It said to them, don't take more than you need, because if you do, it'll spoil. But guess what? Most of them took just what they needed, and others were scared. Notice the word, they were afraid that if they didn't take more and saved it up, they wouldn't have any the next day. See, here we go again with the word trust. They were frightened, they were scared, and by doing that, whatever little they collected for the next day, it was lost because it was rotten. They didn't trust the process. So whether it's manna or money or dollars or pounds, it doesn't matter. There are only three problems on earth: money, health, and relationship. And actually, there aren't even three problems. There is one problem. Us. We. Remember Pogo in the swamp? I've met the enemy, and he is us. And so it's not money by itself that's a problem. Now, I looked at the word one day, for those whose language is English, and no, money is money. And I looked at the first letter of it, and to me, M was for me. And then followed the letters O-N-E. Me, one, and then the letter Y. And I thought, Y must be for you. So I put it together in the strange place, the strange combination which says, me and you becoming one create money. So I thought that was funny, don't you, Steve?
I like that. I think that's very well put.
I am always amazed that I did that as a kind of a joke at first. And then it started getting deeper and deeper into a meaning which says, yeah, if we exchange services between you and me, and we are fair, and we are honest, there will be all the money in the world. We wouldn't have any place to put it. And so going back to that, I've met some of the greatest wealth teachers on earth. One of them, of course, my old friend, my old late friend, he was a student of Dr. Napoleon Hill of Think and Grow Rich, and the book was focused on thinking and grow rich. But Foster Hibbert was his friend and associate, and learned a lot about that. And Foster and I had a lot of discussions about this thing called money. And as you know, I've told the story, I grew up in a relatively ordinary neighborhood, actually not a very wealthy village, and there were farmers and fishermen, and people worked all day to make a living. And I think as I looked at that, I started thinking there's got to be an easier way. And so years later, I did find easier ways. They're called, like, have you ever heard this? Work smarter, not harder. And I did that, and I didn't work as much. And I worked really smart, and I built myself up a really nice living over the years. I mean, I lived well. The hardest thing for me to, the decision for me to make in the morning was now, which car am I going to take to work? It was a beautiful house. I had become what you would call very affluent. And the house was about, gosh, almost 10,000 square feet. Custom-built spa at the back. We had housekeeper and gardener and all kinds of stuff. And yet, I remember clearly to this day walking around that house and thinking, you know, I've got everything. I should really be happy. And yet there was a tinge of sadness within me. There was something that was missing. And I didn't know what it was until much later. But what had happened was I had everything to live with and nothing to live for. And so, subconsciously or otherwise, I must have thought about that and decided, okay, when you have a lot of stuff, maybe you aren't as happy as you thought you would be. So how about if you have nothing? And in our discussions about the subconscious, somehow or the other, somebody heard me, and in a short while, there was nothing. I lost everything and had to start again from scratch. And ever since then, I realized that it's a balance. It's not money by itself. Money is a symbol. Money is God in action. Money is a flow of energy. And it does that honestly and effortlessly. If there is a flow, if you stop the flow, then money disappears. Just like if you stop the flow of electricity from the wires by flipping the switch, the light disappears. The word affluent comes from free flow. That's what a river does. And when this river of energy flows, we are taken care of. All our wants, all our physical wants would be taken care of. Now, there's a whole big word in this. And I've mentioned it over and over again, and I think most people would have forgotten it. It's called trust. Belief is another one. Fear is another one. There's a saying about fear, that which you fear will come upon you. And most people today, when we look at the economy we're in, they're afraid of one thing or the other. Naturally, they earn their living by working. And working is a good thing. It's an exchange of services for something else, which we call a paycheck, which actually, when you think about it, is nothing but a piece of paper that we used to take to the bank and sign at the back and deposit it. And more recently, in the past few years, it's not even a piece of paper. It's a number of electronic signals from one computer to another computer. It appears in your bank, and you check your balance, and your paycheck was magically put there. And if all the computers in the world went dead tomorrow, we still would have that money somewhere, but we couldn't use it. So you see the magical, mystical nature of money. I believe that it moves around freely, and you can have as much of it as you need if you use some very simple laws, or what we would call secrets, if you will. And we will get into some of that in a short while. You had a question, Steve.
Oh, yes. I've got lots of questions. And I think that my questions really represent what I feel the average listener is thinking right now. And I think a lot of people who would be interested in this interview would be people who are in a situation where they don't have as much money as they want, and they want to attract it to themselves. So putting myself in their shoes right now, I'm thinking that they're probably thinking, okay, I'm open to money. I understand its energy. I understand it flows. And they're probably thinking that they're doing everything they can to invite it into their lives, this flow. They're not consciously fighting it, yet it's just not flowing for them. So what would you say to those people?
First of all, I like the word you mentioned. It's not they are not consciously resisting it. I understand that, but that's not the problem. The problem is when we are unconsciously resisting it. We might say, oh yeah, I'm open to money, I deserve more money, I should have money flowing into me because I provide a good service. It doesn't matter what you are, whether you're a teacher, a doctor, a hypnotherapist, an author, someone who serves at a fast food restaurant. It doesn't matter what it is. You are giving something of value, and you should be given back something of equal or greater value. In this case, money is what we're talking about. But what occurs at times, before I get into that, I'll explain it, tell you the little conversation I had with Foster about money. And there's an article on one of my websites called On Becoming Rich. an interview with Foster Hibbert about how to get money. What is it? And Foster dealt with all the money people you could think of. And he spoke to them, he advised them, he counseled them. And those who knew Foster knew he was very well off. But he wasn't always that way. He grew up in a rather average family, but he was in touch with people who knew how to make money. He went to school with some of the household names of this country. And he told me once, he said, you know, association. When you associate with those who have what you don't have, and instead of being envious of them, you try to learn from them, even when you don't think you're learning, part of who they are will embrace you. You will start getting ideas just like they do. And these ideas would lead you to whatever it is, whatever greatness you were looking for, whether it was money or health or, let's say, for example, relationships. So that was a very important thing. But then I came out and bluntly asked him. I said, Foster, I like all the things you talked about, but what do you think is the most important obstacle to obtaining money or becoming wealthy? And this was the first time I heard it from a great teacher like Foster. And I was shocked because I couldn't believe that this was his answer. You know what he said? He said, guilt, John, guilt, G-U-I-L-T. I sat there for a while thinking, guilt? You mean like feeling guilty, Foster? He said, yes, being full of guilt. And I'm saying, I don't really get it. How could guilt be associated with money? And he said, guilt is associated with everything. Money being, as you usually teach, John, and he said that, money, health, relationships. And guilt is associated with all of them. It makes you miserable because it prevents you from getting what you really want and maybe even deserve. Actually, the greatest message of guilt and the only message of guilt is this. And Foster had a way of repeating himself. And he looked me straight in the eye and he says, the message of guilt is, you don't deserve, you don't deserve, you don't deserve, you don't deserve. And I'm thinking to myself, I got it, Foster. I mean, one time or two is enough. You're saying to me, because I'm guilty, I don't deserve. I don't deserve, let's say we're talking about money, I don't deserve money and therefore I don't get it. I still don't understand the other parts of that. And he said, look at it this way, John. Again, I was amazed at this simple analogy. He said, you know, sometimes even in our church or churches or religious institutions or groups of that nature, there is this thought that money is a bad thing. And if money in our subconscious minds, oh, I don't want to be bad, so definitely I won't have too much money. People go back to the Gospels and they remember something that goes like this. Money is the root of all evil. But that's not correct. And Foster even brought that up. He says, that's not what it said in most of the translations, John. I said, I know. I had read it again, and it didn't say money is the root of all evil. It said the love of money is the root of all evil. And then Foster says, but how do you explain this? I love money. And I thought, what is he doing to me? I mean, I'm just a simple guy, and he is complicating this whole thing. But that's not what he was doing. He said, you know, in Greek, they have different words. You know, like philia, for the love of your brother, man, sister, woman, and so forth. You have eros, passionate type of love, and you have agape, this wide, unconditional love of God. And maybe there are other meanings. So when they talk about the love of money, they probably, in our translation, couldn't have found the exact meaning because English doesn't have all the nuances of some other languages. And remember, contrary to what a lot of people think, the Bible wasn't written in English. to start with. At first, it wasn't written at all. It was handed down by what we call the tradition of the elders, at least in the Jewish times. And in the Hindu times, it was handed, told to authors by word of mouth and so forth. So there might have been certain mistranslations here and there, but the message that came down to us is the love of money is evil. It's horrible. I don't want to be evil, but I love money. I love money. What do I do? What love in that sentence really was more closely tied to was the word worship. And then I understood. I said, ah, the worship of money, so much so that we would do anything for it. We would steal, we would break into stores or into banks, we would rob, we would kill. That is what you call the worship of money. That's what you call greed, one of those vices. And then I started to get clear in my mind that money of itself is fantastic. It's neutral. You can do great things with it, or you can do horrible things with it. You can do great things like building hospitals or eradicating malaria or feeding thousands and tens of thousands of people, or you can hire a hitman to get rid of somebody else, somebody you don't like, or to burn down something, or you can indulge yourself in all vices. There is no problem with money. The problem is what you think about it and how you attract it to you. So what I got from Foster was this. People feel guilty about money. I hadn't thought that. They feel because of what they have been taught in their churches. Like, you know, poverty is a virtue. Therefore, since I want to be virtuous, I will remain poor all my life. Or, here's another thought. They're deep in our minds, deep in our subconscious. They've been there for habit patterns. I even heard, they're worldwide. I even heard some of them in the little village I grew up in. There were, of course, a lot of ordinary people, and there were some who were very, very wealthy, some who were very, very poor. And I do remember the ones who were in the middle or very poor would look at the rich ones who lived on the other side of the track, so to say, and say, look at them. They don't care about anything. They don't care about us. They are so rich, they don't know what it is to be poor. You see, when they become rich, they become bad. Don't you see us doing that today? We look at people who are very rich. When I say we, I'm speaking, you know, editorially here. I'm not saying any one particular person, but a good percentage of us look on very wealthy people if we are not ourselves wealthy, or if we are actually totally poor. We'd look at people who are wealthy or relatively wealthy and think, what did they do that I didn't do? What do they have that I don't have? So you see some of the negativities flowing into this, and the minute we go there, we stop the flow. What do you think the word currency came from? Current. What does a current do? It flows. The current in the river, the current in the electrical wires. You see where I'm going with this, Steve? I'm trying to show people that this is a thing that flows, and the metaphysics of it and the reality under it is if you impede that flow, it doesn't care. It just doesn't flow to you.
I do see that. Now, I thought I heard you say a little while back that money is God in action. Is that right?
Yes, I just use that as because I feel it is energy in action. But I think energy and everything on earth is God in us. And so that's why I say God in action. And there are some people who seem to have a lot of it, and some who use it for tremendous good. Of course, the word God is contained in the word good. So I think, again, in our language, we cannot express some of these things totally. But yes, money is God in action, or energy flowing.
Okay, very well put. I like that. You know, interestingly enough, John, my current situation is that I have worked, you know, a long time as a hypnotherapist, over 25 years, and I've made a comfortable life for myself through the work that I've done. But through those years, I've gained in wealth. I've been saving money and so forth, and just doing what I consider to be a normal thing, which is putting aside money and still giving to charities and still earning money and so forth. But through that process, I have sort of separated myself, though I haven't tried to. I've sort of separated myself from some of my friends. Some of my friends are not wealthy, and I don't judge them, just like I don't judge my friends who have more money than me. But I get this impression from them that they consider themselves what I would call the virtuous poor. They have actually taken steps in order to maintain their low level of wealth. They actually enjoy being in that situation because, as you mentioned, they feel that people who have money, more money than they have, are actually evil people and bad people and must have done something wrong. So in order to maintain their piety, in order to maintain their virtue, they've actually taken steps to ensure that they don't become wealthy. But at the same time, these are the same people, bless their hearts, friends of mine I'm talking about, who from time to time will say, hey, can you help me out? Can you help me out financially? Can you talk about that kind of dichotomy that people have, on the one hand, hating money, on the other hand, needing money very often and really never getting a handle on how the whole thing works so that they can have a comfortable life that they're not really in constant combat with?
I am so happy you talked about that, because that is one of the most common things we find. I have bunches of friends, some of them who have been, I've been both poor and rich, and like the guy from Texas says, it's a lot more fun being rich, okay? I think that's a great thing. And so I've had an opportunity to watch both ends a number of times, and you notice these stable people, hardworking, wonderful people, who never ever achieve a tremendous degree of financial success because of that piety and that thinking about money. I mean, our religions haven't really helped a lot in that either, because if you are a devout churchgoer, okay, and to clarify this to anybody who is listening here, I pick on all religions and I pick on none, because I found great things in all of them. And I've found some things that weren't that wonderful in many of them either. But there are good things. You know, you've got to find the diamonds that are stuck in that little bag there that they call religion. And yet, our religious people go to a very simple, let's pick on the Christians today, okay? They go to a very simple statement in the New Testament, in the Gospels, where Jesus said, it is more difficult for a rich man to get into heaven than for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. Now, if you were to read that literally, it means how in the world could a camel get through the eye of a needle? So that's impossible. Therefore, rich people will never get to heaven. And do you know this thing about heaven and hell scares so many people that they would rather die now and go to heaven then die much later and go to wherever, hell or purgatory or wherever. So what they do, they deliberately keep themselves from being wealthy, and sometimes the part of really punishing themselves, because they think it's a crime, it's a sin to be wealthy because of that one, well, one of the reasons would be because of that statement. Imagine yourself, a little boy of 6 or 7 or 8 years in Sunday school. You have this wonderful father and mother and two brothers and sister maybe. And every Sunday you go to Sunday school, and maybe once or twice or three times a month you hear them telling you the story about rich people and so forth. There's another one about the rich man and Lazarus and how they both died. And the Lazarus, when he was alive, and the rich man was, I think many people remember this if they're Christians, and Lazarus used to pick up the scraps that would fall from the rich man's table. And the story goes on saying they both died, and Lazarus went to heaven. He was sitting at the right hand of Abraham, Father Abraham. And the rich man died, and he went to the other place. And when he was suffering, and there was a big gulf between them, so people from one side couldn't get to the other side. And when he looked around, the rich man looked around, there was fire, and the heat was so bad. And he turned to Abraham, and he said, Father Abraham, it's so bad here. Please, please, send, you know, Lazarus to tell my kith and kin down on earth how to live, or so they too won't come to this place. I mean, this is what we're teaching people. So as that little kid learns and goes to Sunday school, and again, my apologies to everyone and no one, because these stories are duplicated in many religious writings from many different religions. And if you don't believe me, check it out when you go home, or if you're home right now after we talk, check it out. You'll find the story. And because this little boy is raised that way, and he notices that his mom and dad always worked hard and there was hardly enough money, he grows up, becomes a young man, but deep in his mind, deep in the subconscious, is written this thing about money. He can't break it because he never studied it too well. He never examined his beliefs about money. Because if he did, he would find that, oh, maybe that's not how it is. He'd be free if he accepted, and then money will start coming into it. It's what he's doing. He's looking at a door, on the other side of which is all the money in the world that he could need or use or ever want. And he's trying to get to it by pushing on the door to open it. The problem is the door opens to the inside. He's just got to pull it back to get to it. He's got to trust himself. That's one of the reasons this happens. So they grow up with it. They believe in it. And because they don't examine their beliefs, what occurs is they work according to the programming. I mean, programming is very, very powerful. And many times we do it ourselves. We really do. We do it to ourselves. Talking about Foster and the teachings of wealth, I remember the story he told to illustrate something like this. He said, there these bunch of construction workers. Every day they go to the job. They're good buddies and they work and they sit down at lunchtime and they have their lunch and get back to work, go home, see each other on the weekends, and their families get together, have a little backyard cookout or something. But there was this one guy among them, and every time he would have his lunch, he would look at it and say, oh no, not again. That's what I have for lunch today? And every day he'd say that. Not again. Oh goodness, not again. Peanut butter and jelly? Again? Until one day a bunch of his buddies came up to him and said, hey, why don't you do something about it? Because these were macho guys. Just, why don't you tell your wife to make something different for you? And the poor guy looked at them and said, my wife doesn't make it for me. I pack my own lunch. Ah, are you getting an idea of what's happening here now? Nobody had to teach us to do this. We took other people's beliefs and made them our own.
That is fascinating how we many times work against ourselves without even realizing it. John, I'm enjoying listening to this information and learning about money and looking at it from a spiritual perspective, and I look forward to learning a lot more from you.
That will be great. I'll talk a lot more about it.